Alright, we are in Windows World. It's great to be in Building 26 again. Please introduce yourself.
I'm Prashant Ratnajnani. I'm a developer on the Windows performance team, and my team, the overall team, owns a lot of the server and client performance efforts that we do in Microsoft. I specifically work on client performance and own a large part of the performance telemetry infrastructure that drives improvements in Windows.
Awesome. Now, last year we went around and got to talk to your same team, right? Mm-hmm. People that work for Michael Fortin.
Mm-hmm.
And let's kind of dig in this year. I mean, that was Windows 7, which was a great evolutionary step.
Yep.
You've taken another one in Windows 8. Basically, I just would like to know, like, what's new in the world of telemetry for Windows?
So, I mean, previously, if anybody has really heard about PerfTrack, PerfTrack's this mechanism that we built into the operating system in order to collect performance data from real-world user situations. So, a lot of time you'll find in the industry and in general, people spend a lot of time talking about benchmarks. And as an organization, we're not huge believers in benchmarks that are hokey, but are believers in actually collecting data from people and understanding how they use the operating system and then making the performance for those scenarios better. So that's really what PerfTrack enables. It kind of stands on the shoulders of giants. We've got extensive telemetry capabilities in the system, a system we call SQIM, Software Quality Metrics, in order to collect data from the field. We have Watson, if folks have ever seen sort of that dialogue come up that says, you know, send more information to Microsoft about the problem. And you think about performance telemetry and think about extending those two aspects, the software quality metrics, and then getting rich, actionable data back in the form of like Watson-rich data. And that's really what the performance telemetry pipeline is. So in Windows 7, essentially Michael Fortin actually pioneered the idea of PerfTrack and performance telemetry, and he said, look, we need to be able to build on this infrastructure. And the concept at the time was exceedingly simple. It was essentially if we could instrument key points in the system with sort of start-stop telemetry. So I'll give you a classic example which applies to Windows 7 but not to 8. You know, when you click on a start menu, we should be able to record a start at the time that the start menu was clicked. You should be able to report a stop when the start menu is up.
Mm-hmm.
And say, okay, that's how long it takes for a start menu to come up on a user screen. So we get that data back and we're able to plot that data and slice it across a whole bunch of dimensions, like what kind of antivirus software is running. Is this a machine with a solid state drive or not? Is this a machine with a highly capable CPU? Furthermore, what PerfTrack enables is essentially, okay, so you know, let's take an example that the start menu is slow in, say, 5% of occurrences. Now, those 5% of occurrences are really where we care. That hurts. And so you want to be able to reach out to the world and say, look, if you have a start menu problem, I need a trace to be snapped and sent back to Microsoft that I can do something about in order to improve that problem, as opposed to sort of abstractly the start menu performance is slow. And so what we have is this infrastructure called ETW, which is what we use throughout the performance team, which is essentially rich instrumentation in the operating system to the degree of this thread switched in, this thread switched out, this is the stack on a context switch when it switched out, this is the stack of the thread that readied it that enabled it to run again, and this is the profile stack which tells us where it's spending CPU. Mm. And you take those constructs together, you get that data back, and it's entirely possible for us from that buffer of data that we get from the machine to reconstruct why the start menu was slow and where the problem lies and then do something about it internally. So that's kind of the Windows 7 story. And in Windows 8, we said, look, we've got the basis of the system, but we need to be able to do much more with it. And so that basically translated into a bunch of capabilities in the operating system, as well as in our back-end infrastructure, right? So if you look at the client itself, let's just construct a few simple things on top of that. Is it necessary for every performance problem to be identified as a start-stop? Not at all. How do you track animation glitches? You need to be able to know the scope of how long that animation was taking. And then you need an agent on the box that basically counts glitches, aggregates that metric back, and says, look, when we switch from, now in Windows 8, the start screen, from the desktop to the start screen, and you get that beautiful fly-in animation, how many frames of that glitched? Did any glitch at all, right? So that's what we call that a trigger scenario, which is essentially just an endpoint where we can collect data. Furthermore, you need the concept of metadata, because we're collecting data, and to go back to the Windows 7 example, you say, hey, the start menu was slow. How many items were in the start menu? Right? How many icons were displayed? We don't have that rich contextual information in 7, but in 8, we said, hey, let's really extend the PerfTrack pipeline and provide rich metadata. And that enables a whole host of scenarios. Let's take a simple one, launching an app. Wouldn't you want to know which app it was, right? And that's such a simple thing that you must know. And so we're able to get that kind of data back. But even richer, we're able to get very, very rich metadata around some of these scenarios. Let's take battery life as an example, mm-hmm. although that's something we can talk about in more detail. But from a battery life perspective, sure, the metric that really matters is how much of the battery is draining. But the metadata associated with that can be exceedingly rich, which is which devices are causing the battery to drain, which apps were using CPU at the time, how many CPU cycles were used, how much disk I/O was done. And so we were able to pack all that contextual information in as metadata and send it home to Microsoft. And then the tracing capabilities remain. We've built very rich what we call escalation capabilities. Again, in 7, you were kind of like, the start menu is slow. If the start menu is slow, send me a trace. And now we're able to do these rich things saying, I want to know when an app launch is slow, if it's this particular app with this particular version, and use that metadata to really craft the specific question that you're trying to get an answer to.
Okay.
Right? And then we get those traces back. On the back end side is where a lot of the innovation has happened as well, right? So how do you take this data with all this rich metadata information, boil that into performance metrics that make sense to developers within Windows, and even sort of to third parties? How do you tell an app author that his app is not performing that well? And so we've had to build very, very rich reporting schemes in collaboration with other teams, a technology we call internally called Telminer, which is essentially a set of abstractions that we can build on top of in order to do very rich reporting. And they basically have pluggable modules that allows you to switch in statistical techniques that you want to use on the data or machine learning techniques that you want to use on the data. And we've been building on that as well. And lastly, when you get the traces back, mm-hmm. what do you do with them? I mean, one manual workflow that one could envision is I get a trace, I open it in the tools that we have, and we have a great set of tools called the Windows Performance Analyzer, which is, you know, part of the kits that go with Windows 8, which allow anybody, in fact, if an end user has some notion of how an operating system works, can totally download that tool, take a trace, and see, you know, what's going on with the system.
Right.
You do need a bit of system knowledge. but you could see sort of the workflow being, okay, I'm going to struggle through this trace by trace, but is there a means to basically use that data, aggregate it, and extract what I would like to call performance insights from it? Let's take a concrete example. So app launch, right? That's one that's very near and dear to my heart. So we go out in beta, and we're monitoring our app launch telemetry, and we're kind of like, Wait, apps are taking a little longer to launch than we would like. And we look at it across a whole host of devices. We're kind of like, the problem is kind of constrained to rotational drives. So we go out, we collect about 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 traces from the field, get back that data, and then you're basically scrubbing that data, and we have these rich techniques built into the tools, which we call weight analysis, and in fact, you know, you can do that analysis as well, which is basically we backward chain back through the endpoint of the app launch, trying to say on the critical path of this app launch, what's the limiting factor? And you know, as it turns out, you know, disk I/O is a huge factor. Unsurprisingly, you know, we can't keep everything in memory all the time. That's just the way the operating system is. And so you get back these traces, and you could struggle through them one by one, and we build these aggregation techniques and rich database structures which allow us to explore the data. And they start out by telling you, look, you're basically limited from an I/O perspective. There's a lot of engineering that goes into that. I'm simplifying that, but it kind of says, okay, you're limited from an I/O perspective. And then we're able to take the rich aggregated data from all 1,500 traces and say, show me the underlying patterns. Show me the patterns where disk I/O is a factor. Because we have a vast multitude of apps out there. And, you know, some apps are going to do silly things. Mm-hmm. Whereas what we're really interested in as an operating system team is not only enabling the app author to do a great job, but more importantly at that stage in the product, saying we don't want to miss anything that fundamentally makes the platform limited in any way. And you know, those are the kind of exercises that we undertook and essentially went through and identified that our app launch prefetching wasn't working as effectively as we would like, and that we weren't being able to read in data sequentially. Sequential access is very important on a rotational drive. So on an app launch, can you judge what data the app is going to need and quickly read that in sequentially such that it's in memory as the app is coming up? And then work with other members of the performance team to really fix that prefetching algorithm and say, okay, we missed a few cases and this is the kind of stuff that we want to cover. And that led to a huge jump in sort of app launch performance from beta to RC.
Right.
And it's probably one of the more simplistic examples, you know, of what I can give. But, you know, that kind of simple insight, which was just not possible earlier because our labs don't allow us to do that rich real-world analysis, is something that's possible today.
Excellent. Now, in this world of connected apps and sort of continuous delivery of services and this whole client-cloud continuum, what I've been noticing is, in both authoring apps and using apps, is there's fundamental latency that you're going to have to deal with that you're not going to be able to solve because it might, you know, the internet is a physics problem.
Yes.
Right? The connection to the endpoint is a physics problem.
That's exactly right.
But there are things you can do as app developers to cache intelligently and stuff like that, but that's sort of outside the context of this talk.
Mm-hmm.
So really what I want to ask you is, you get a lot of data. A lot of the data you're getting probably is, this app took a long time to launch because they're going and making a call out to a database and sitting there waiting. Even though it's asynchronous, you're still on the start screen.
That's right.
So how do you mine and decide, okay, ignore that, or maybe there was actually a networking problem in the system?
I think that's a fantastic question, and there are examples to that we've done across the system. So even if you take our very own connected apps like the store, etc., right?
Mm-hmm.
When we're getting this data back, this weight analysis algorithm that I talked about definitely will segment out on the critical path saying, look, we've got a bunch of network delays, right? Mm-hmm. And for the most part, we've treated network delays as something that we didn't believe had you know, a problem in the core to start with. And we went and solved the other problems first. But when we went back and looked at the network stack, we did find cases where we had delays in proxy determination, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or firewall delays, and then constructs like that in the system where we're not being able to get out because we have delays inherent in our system which are preventing that from happening. And there's been a bunch of great work by the proxy team and others in order to intelligently cache that data and that context. In an app domain, it actually makes a lot of sense because the whole foundation of our Windows web app infrastructure is actually built on top of Trident.
Mm.
Which is, you know, our engine that actually drives IE. And so that leads to a lot of sharing of smart intelligent concepts like, I mean, you all seen temporary internet files and things like that.
Mm.
And how does that map in an app world? So there was great work done through the cycle from the very beginning saying, we need to incorporate those similar caching techniques, you know, from the web world,
mm-hmm.
and bring them back to our app infrastructures. Now, there are cases, of course, with specific apps where we give them very, very clear guidance of what or what is not acceptable to our customers.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take the example you gave of sort of a connected app and, you know, you're still sort of at the start screen. And one of the fundamental edicts is, look, don't make a blocking network call before the splash screen is dismissed, right? And so we look for those cases very, very closely through our performance telemetry, because what we're analyzing in the app launch is really the splash screen time and how long a user is left staring at the splash screen.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment I see a blocking network wait on that stack, that's an automatic bug to me. Because whether or not there's latency on the back end or not, we need to be able to ensure that there are a certain set of actions that a user performs where they're never stuck around waiting for forward progress, right? And, you know, people put up extended splash screens, and that's certainly one way to work around the problem. But like you mentioned, it's entirely possible to build connected apps that, while they're refreshing the rest of their data, show a compelling view to the user that enables them to start getting started with their work. So some of these are, you know, some of these concepts are something that we really want to push out to the app community as well, which we've kept largely internal to ourselves. But the hope is that with better tooling and the tools work that the rest of the team is doing, that we just kind of say, no, can't do it, you can't do this stuff.
Excellent. So, like last time we discussed this, I think what's really interesting, you're getting all this data from the real world. What sort of things, you know, have surprised you or, you know, delighted you or just like, wow? Because you never really know how people are going to use something until it's in their hands.
Yeah, that's an interesting question because we always... So, the stuff that surprised me is the sheer... When you look at a few traces, there's a few things that pop out. And some of them are surprising. Some of them you just know to be true, but then they hurt when you see them. The first, I'd say, is the impact of sort of third-party software on the operating system. I think, you know, in the performance team, we have a pretty good appreciation of how certain products can impact our performance. Say, take antivirus software. Mm. I think that's a gimme. You know, they have a role to play in their space. Mm. They have to provide security, which means they have all sorts of hooks in the system and can really hurt us. But the secondary effects of the software that we have in our system and the kind of stuff that pops out, without naming names, you know, very popular apps that are pushing out data to the disk every 2 seconds and really impacting that I/O throughput, or the sheer amount of leaks that we can see through our telemetry. I mean, these are things that are obvious in hindsight, but the number of traces that we get back where we go, wait, it's not supposed to be that way. How can the system be under so much memory pressure? Or how can there be so much of an I/O load on the system? We must have done something wrong. And you kind of look at it and you go, okay, the sheer amount of third-party apps that we have out there in the ecosystem, as well as third-party software like antivirus software, and how much that plays into the customer experience and the experience that people has with Windows machine has certainly been eye-opening from Windows 7 and through Windows 8. And I think that's, in large part, has driven a lot of the initiatives that we have around even our new app model and trying to separate the apps from each other such that one app being unresponsive cannot impact another. Or that when you switch away from an app, unless it has a background exemption, we're going to suspend it so that it can no longer interfere with the foreground activity or cause battery life. And these isolation techniques, you know, are kind of obvious in hindsight, but I think our telemetry system has a large part in actually driving them through. The second thing I think is surprising when you look at these traces, and one thing I should note, by the way, is that traces are completely anonymized.
Of course.
There is no information that we can tell about the user or who it is or how, but what we can tell is the set of apps that they're cycling through and how they're using the machine. What boggles the mind is the sheer amount of stuff people get up to and the creative ways in which they use their machines, which is fairly apparent when you look at a trace. You know, you've got a person downloading a torrent at the same time that they're streaming music and getting up to all sorts of browsing and switching through, you know, 15 apps in the space of a minute. And that's certainly another, you know, newfound appreciation of how people, external Microsoft, use their machines, because we have a perception of the self-host population, the population within Microsoft sending us data, as not being representative because they are developers. Mm. And that's largely been true. Mm. And then you look to the outside world and you see the set of power users who are really sort of bringing the system to its knees. Mm. And that's how we inform a lot of our investments going forward.
Excellent.
So how do we protect ourselves? How do we protect the user experience when they want to do all these things and enable those things while still ensuring that the system is responsive at the same time?
Absolutely. Which is critically important.
Absolutely.
I mean, especially in this world of modern, Windows Store apps or full screen, there's one thing at a time, right?
Yep.
Otherwise you don't have multiple things running behind.
Yep.
Although it is interesting, I would like to know, so have you seen telemetry of, you might have actually got some telemetry from me, man.
Entirely
because,
possible.
I was testing a relatively large number of Windows Store apps.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, I would download them, as like, you know, hundreds
all together,
of them.
Yeah.
And run all of them. And then they would all be suspended.
Yeah.
And I did notice over time there was some issues with the device. And it could have been related to drivers or whatnot, but the moral of the story is that you got that information.
We did.
And this was beta, an RC time frame. And it's, you know, like I said, at this point running the RTM, I'm having experienced that on the same hardware. So that's an example of experiencing something and then not experiencing it because of the information that you guys got, potentially. Or maybe I got an updated driver and it was a driver issue.
No, I mean, there's certainly been investments that have been driven through telemetry, but at the same time, the PERF team, from years of looking at this telemetry and looking at systems, has a pretty good sense of what's going to be important and what's not, right? So if you look at the app model and some of the work that my colleagues did on suspending apps.
Mm-hmm.
So the kernel team built the infrastructure in order to sort of suspend the apps and to ensure they didn't interfere and we didn't have hangs as a result. And then other folks on my team have done very creative work around saying, look, when you're about to suspend an app, what we should do is we should ensure that we keep it resident in memory as much as possible. That means that we should get rid of as much of its memory that could be recreated on demand. So take images as an example, right? Is it possible for us not to just tear down the images, but to offer them to the system and say, if you ever need the memory, you can have these because I can recreate them. I'd prefer if you didn't, but if you needed it, you could, right? And that sets up basically these means to drive down memory consumption for the suspended apps, again protecting the foreground experience. And furthermore, we knew that we couldn't keep all of this resident in memory, so they've done some great work around actually swapping these processes out to the disk and ensuring that they're small enough that we can write them out quickly, and then doing some great work that when you resume the app, and we got to get it up for you in 500 milliseconds or less, otherwise you're going to notice it, how do we quickly suck all that data back in and have that done sequentially and beautifully such that you don't know the difference between whether an app was suspended, swapped out, not running, and all of that is completely transparent to you. And those were initiatives they took on even before they saw the performance telemetry. And then we've used the performance telemetry to validate saying, look, when we write out these suspended apps, do they interfere with the foreground app? And kind of like, no. We can conclusively see that in performance telemetry, you know, that we are not seeing instances of that. So we made the right decision over here. Or are we meeting our resume time needs, right? Is this swap mechanism really working well for us? So I've talked a lot about telemetry being this discovery mechanism of, you know, we'll find problems using it. And I think the part that we don't end up underscoring a lot when we talk about the performance telemetry pipeline is that it's also a great validation mechanism for us, because our tests simply cannot cover the gamut of devices and users that we have out there. But that curve of the resume times tells it all. It's like, yes, we succeeded.
Great.
Right? And, you know, this is awesome. And here's the places where we have problems that, you know, either we can fix in this version, or what deep thinking do we need to do to inform our investments the next time around.
That's awesome. Excellent, man. So I guess the one last question I'd ask you, you mentioned, you know, we're in this world of apps, and, you know, we want lots and lots of apps written, lots and lots of great apps written.
Absolutely.
And with the capabilities that you guys have enabled, I mean, you know, when I think of Fresh Paint, I'm just like, man, that's cool. Right, DirectX and XAML, I'm like, come on.
Absolutely.
So the question I have for you is, as an app developer, how do I access this data? I want to know how my app is doing in the real world.
Yeah, so that's certainly been a topic of much internal discussion, right? It makes clear sense to us that if we derive so much value from the data, so would a third-party app developer, so would even a Microsoft property like Office.
Sure.
Scaling out the data has its own challenges, though. And notwithstanding the fact that, oh, how do we manage this data, I think those are technology problems that we could go solve. I think there's a lot to be said about the tooling story and really understanding what to do with the data when we get it back to you. And one of the things that I'm really passionate about is not just giving people data, but giving them insights. So I can't really talk about what our plans are in this space, and, you know, that's still fuzzy to me to some degree.
Fair enough.
But there's certainly a lot of debate going on internally about how much of this data do we expose to our app developers, and in a way that they can actually leverage it and use it to make the product better, rather than just kind of saying, hey, your app's no good, right?
Sure.
We really need to enable them to bridge that gap. And a lot of the work that we've done around the app onboarding process and the kits there really are about measuring the app and putting it through its paces and saying, look, to achieve a great experience for a customer, you need to fit within these guidelines. You need to be able to launch, you know, in no more than 2 seconds. You need to be able to suspend reliably every time. And so it starts with that testing. And once you've got a rock solid base there, that's when I really want to think about scaling out and getting this data to the app developers.
Sure. Well, hey, great job. Thanks for the great work that you and your team do.
Thank you.
And this is just, you know, one of the things that's great about coming and being able to have these types of conversations is this is the stuff that people see, but they don't see.
That's very true.
Right? The end users get the results of the work that you do.
That's very true.
But it's not in your face. It's implicit.
Yes.
It launched fast. It came back from suspension. The machine, it works. It's great. Yeah. So rock and roll, man.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And we'll come back and see you next time.
Absolutely.
Cheers.
Perfect.